All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to the Labyrinth of the First Gen. This week we are continuing the conversation with One Love, which is an organization that is based in St. Croix, dedicated to the activism, the visibility, and the allyship around the LGBTQ population in the Virgin Islands and the Caribbean. On this episode, we're going to dive deeper into One Love as an organization, what it meant for them to start One Love, and how do they envision the mission of One Love in the future. Here's a small snippet of this week's episode. This is Jamal, who is on the board of the One Love team and is from St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands.
I feel that if there were organizations like this when I was growing up and I was still trying to figure out what in the world is going on with me, that maybe I would have felt more comfortable in expressing myself much than I came to figure this out.
This is season 2 of Labyrinth of the First Gen, where we will hear the stories and the wisdom of leaders of African descent to learn more about how they are creating paths and breaking barriers across Central America and the Caribbean. This is Labyrinth of the First Gen, where we are pioneers just by simply existing. Last episode, we talked a lot about One Love as an organization, but what Jay, Bobby, and Jamal emphasized to me was that starting One Love wasn't as easy as it sounds, right? There was a lot of things that happened and a lot of things that they had to face in order for them to start this organization and also make a commitment to do this work.
The drama of us deciding, okay, we need to do this. We need to be a nonprofit. We need to do the work. I don't know if that's what, because I didn't go through the drama of, okay, because for us, it wasn't like, we basically had to face our traumas.
Jay, Bobby, and Jamal talked about the experience of what was it like for them to join the Pride Parade for the first time, and highlighting that it was putting themselves and their lives on the line.
And we had to face our fears before we decided, okay, we're going to do the work. It wasn't just, we were not, I wouldn't say we weren't confident, but to us, it felt like we were putting our life on the line when we joined the parade. So yeah, I don't know if Bobby wants to go over, because I know I just skimmed through it and I act like I did a textbook definition.
I mean, this is just exactly what you were saying. It was when we started to join the parade, all of us, I think, had the same kind of feeling that, you know, this might be the day I die, and that's what it is. We're just gonna have to push forward. And so, just like Jay was saying, it was just like we had to. I guess that was, an initiation or something, but it was definitely an experience that positioned us to be able to deal with future fears. Because I think that was, and I wish this wasn't the case, and there's so many brave people that I know who I feel like can be themselves without fear, but sometimes I do still experience fear, and knowing how to handle that fear and combat it is really important because we're going to enter a lot of scary situations, but you have to know how to be able to press forward, but also preserve yourself.
I do feel like there is, for me, I do have a hyper awareness doing this work, and I do try to hold on to as much privacy that I can about my life while doing this work. Because for us, initially, it was a fearful thing to not only join the parade, but to decide we're going to become a nonprofit and we're going to do the advocacy work. So I guess I should take that as a proud moment. I don't really think about it in depth like that, but Bobby did make me realize that the bravery that we have in actually taking on this work and the obstacles that we went through, not only in the community, but within ourselves to be able to do this work. I don't know if Jamal had the same experience as it comes to, you know, you gotta overcome something
because
to do the work.
Here's how Jamal shared his own experience.
Yeah, because I honestly think there are times I'm still sort of trying to, I was at times I had to sort of, for lack of better term, I think I had to make peace with myself maybe years and years ago as I, you know, was like, hey, I'm gay. I had to say that to myself some years back. And the process by which you had to, you know, was like you're coming out to yourself, you're coming out to everybody else, you're basically now comfortable enough to say these things.
Jamal talked about some challenges that are ongoing, especially dealing with accepting yourself, but also dealing with how you're being received as a queer person in your community.
Some few weeks ago, I had, you know, I was just randomly in a Facebook forum and somebody, you know, throws out a gay slur at me. And I'm like, okay, that's all you have? The fact that I am now at this point where I would say, the fact that I am at this point now where I'm like, okay, that's all you have? I was not at this point even just 5 years ago. So to be at this point, I was like, okay, that's all you have? I even joke with the person, like, oh, are you mad that I didn't pay you attention on an app or something like that? So the fact that I myself have come to this point where that is so much would want every other person to have to be at this point, was like, hey, this is what you are. There's absolutely nothing you can do about that besides living it. And I said that years ago, I was going to live in this. I don't care what any of you say about me. I have to live in this existence. This is mine. If you want to live your existence some other way, that's for you. But I have to go and be comfortable in myself.
Jamal mentioned that learning is an ongoing process and the importance of learning from people in your community and learning from people who have expertise on things that you may not know.
So it is this process by which you slowly learn it. And I say this as someone is like, I'm learning all of this thing every day. There are things that I did not know. And I'm trying to say, okay, you don't know everything. And it's important to surround yourself with the experts. And once you have the experts and they tell you, hey, don't say this, say this, be careful of this. I think just with that, you are allowing progression. And with allowing progression, I think that's all we want. We want the progression. We want to see things improve.
You mentioned a lot about generational differences and serving different generations. When we're thinking about the LGBTQIA community, how do those generational differences show up? What are maybe some challenges that come with serving communities from different age groups?
For the older generation, I think it's more of a time of the day type of thing. Like for the nightclub event, we actually had to start early and end at 2 o'clock. And the reason we started so early is because we wanted the older generation to come. I think we need to do more events geared towards them because, you know, they walk up days have gone. So we might do a club event for dancing and partying and it's not their style, or they need to be in bed by 9 o'clock. So I think we do, for the older generation, in order to serve them, we need to gear more events towards them. I think they love the educational panels.
Jay highlighted that although there's differences between the needs of older generations versus younger generations, there are some similarities between the groups.
I think the older generation, the younger generation kind of have some similarities, because what I've noticed is that some queer folks from the younger generation are actually, even though they would walk in their truth, they're not vocal about their queerness. Where our generation, the millennials, we're very vocal. So it's more of like, I see the older generation as being the L, don't ask, don't tell, I'ma live my life. I see our generation as being, I'ma be loud, you're gonna know, you're gonna see it, you're gonna hear it. And then I see Generation Z as being, I'm comfortable expressing my gender identity, dressing how I want, but I actually don't need to come to your event. Because they have their spots where they like to party, but you won't really see them as much in the events that we created. They would be more in their own little spots, and they're not as vocal about their queerness, but they're still accepted. That's one of the great mysteries of the glass ceiling that Jamal was talking about.
In discussing generational differences and similarities, we also talked about what are some things that were surprising.
The first parade, I feel like it cracked the glass ceiling, and certain things came out of breaking that barrier. And one of the things that I did not expect was for Generation Z to be more quiet, exist, but be more quiet about their existence.
Jay, Jamal, and Bobby talked about their work of understanding and continuing to understand what the younger generation's needs are.
Whereas Bobby more focuses on the older generation, I am very curious about how we can serve the younger generation. What are their needs? Do they need more virtual events? Do they need more virtual spaces? Do they feel comfortable in virtual spaces than in public spaces? Do they need the social events, or do they need us to do more work in the public school so that they could feel comfortable in school? So I think their needs are different, and I'm currently doing my research and learning to see what exactly their needs are. But I can tell that it's different.
We are going to take a quick break and we will continue when we return. Hello everyone, this is Wayu Shamika here, and I just want to take a moment to express my appreciation and gratitude for all the folks that have tuned into the Labyrinth of the First Gen this year. And I also want to say happy holidays to you. There are two things that I want to announce. And the first one is thank you for continuing to write your reviews and provide those stars on iTunes, Spotify, or whatever platform you're listening to. In addition to that, I have launched a short, less than 5-minute survey where you could tell me what are some things that you appreciated or what are some things that you would love to hear for season 3 of Labyrinth of the First Gen. Something that is also really exciting in the works right now is that I'm offering free 30-minute office hours with me So you get to schedule an appointment. I'm going to put that link in the show description. And we can spend 30 minutes talking about maybe your feedback from one of the episodes or a moment in one of the episodes that stood out to you. Or we can discuss if you are a storyteller, a person of color yourself, and you have many different ideas for a podcast, or brainstorming what potentially a brand could look like for yourself. That can also be a conversation. So you can bring anything during this time, and I am looking forward to getting to know the audience of the Labyrinth of the First Gen and getting to know you. And we are back. This is the Labyrinth of the First Gen. Here is Jamal, who talked about how thinking through generational needs are important.
I think I'm agreeing with what both of you are saying. It's definitely trying to find that sort of happy medium when it comes to these things, because like you said, when it comes to the millennials, I think the millennials right now are, hey, you know, we're going to be here, we're going to do what we want. It's Gen Z. I think Gen Z is pretty much still trying to, maybe it's that the millennials have set it up to say, okay, we're going to be here and we're going to tell you about this stuff. And maybe Gen Z has said, okay, this has been established, so maybe we don't feel as if we have to tell you this. And it's like, you should not be assuming anything about anybody. It's just like, oh, it's like, oh, she likes girls? Okay, that's none of my business. So I'm thinking maybe that's what it is, that we may not, we probably cannot assume anything, and we still have to try to find this happy middle ground.
And Jamal made reference to how this also shows up in St. Thomas.
I think that's the same thing that's happening in St. Thomas, where we have to find this sort of happy medium, because like I said, I know there is a heavy population of, let's call them the DLs. There is this heavy population of this, and we would have to find this kind of heavy middle to say, okay, maybe they would feel more comfortable in expressing themselves if they found that space to say, okay, I can be myself without fear of, you know, persecution. You have to find this happy space where you can exist, you can be free.
One of the questions that I have is around the mission of One Love as it is right now and the work that you do. Do you anticipate the mission changing in the future? As you all mentioned, future generations, it looks very different, right? What their needs are and figuring out what their needs are. Do you anticipate the mission changing as well with the generation?
I think the mission will remain the same, but the way we go about achieving it is going to change based on what that generation tells us that they need. Because I do plan to do some focus groups with the college level Gen Z and also high school level. And based on these presentations that we've had, some of these queer youths are actually coming out and saying, like basically Jamal said, they don't feel like they have to say, I am this. Like, there are safe spaces being created in elementary schools for trans and non-binary kids to use the restroom. You know, there are clubs being created in the high schools for queer kids. So I don't think the mission of creating those safe spaces and those programs, those social educational programs, are going to change. I think the way it looks is going to change based on the needs of that generation.
Yeah, and I think that's what this looks like, is the fact that this will not look the same for everybody. we must be, I think we must be a bit cautious as to how we go about these things, because like we have been saying, this journey does not look the same for every person, whether it be, you know, the privilege that you may have, the things that you have access to. It's going to look radically different for all of us. So I really think it's just going to depend on, you know, what you have access to and what is in front of you. It's really going to depend on that. And I really do not believe that this, I don't think that the overall goal does not change. It's just that how we go about it may look different. How I may go about it may look different than anybody else does. So I think it's just a matter of interpretation.
I would want to hear from Bobby, from Jay, Jamal. For you, what is your overall mission for being part of this organization? And what do you envision as being your work for the future of this organization?
This is how Bobby responded to this question.
Mainly what I'm thinking about is one of the first events that we, or the conferences that we went to as One Love, the student organization. I think, Jay, you were there too. It was a Creating Change. It took place in Chicago. And one of the events that was really, that was the most affecting for me was when there was like this book event. There was a kind of a mini ball that happened. And that was really, really empowering because it was seeing queer people just be able to be themselves and be joyful and just be free to express themselves and just be. And I think that the mission for me would be to do all that I can to be able to bring people in the Virgin Islands that same freedom, especially like Jazz was saying earlier, people, Black and brown people, people who are local Virgin Islanders who are more caught in the what should be a support system, but is sometimes a web of familial ties that forces discretion and causes a lot of anxiety. So I hope that's what I would push for, is to continue to fight for people to be able to have and to enjoy that freedom and enjoy the joy of just being themselves.
Jamal talked about what One Love as an organization meant to him and for his community.
Well, this is really a question to consider, but I do think a lot of it boils down to like what we have been saying. It's, you know, it's the ability to exist. I would love it that it's some younger person still trying to figure it out, and they're seeing organizations like this, and they're seeing spaces being created for people who may not necessarily fit into this perfect little box. And once they see that this support system exists and there are people who are rooting for them, and they may not even realize that these people are rooting for them, this is what is going to make the difference. And before, we are dealing with a very sort of conservative population here. So once again, it is this establishing of these spaces to let people know, hey, this exists, there's no problem with you, and there are these people here who want the utmost best for you.
Okay, for me personally, I want the organization to always exist, even if I'm no longer to have my boots on the ground to do the work. So I actually thought that this was something I would have to wait 5 years to accomplish, and it's happening in year 3. So for me, I'm just like really grateful for everything that we've been able to do so far in the future, I more see all of the organizations in the Virgin Islands working together to create resources, virtual resources, just basically, like Jamal said, I want queer people to be able to reach out to the organization and know where to go to access healthcare for their needs, whether it's a trans person trying to get hormones or if it's just a gay or lesbian person trying to find a doctor that is understanding about their lifestyle and friendly towards their needs, you know? Like, I want people from the community to be able to reach out to us and get whatever resource they need. I want to create an environment where I'm very open to people having different opinions. And I respect that need for people to have different opinions. Although we do live in a conservative island, I want an environment where we're respected by the conservatives. They don't have to agree with our lifestyle, but they can respect the fact that we are from here. We are Caribbean, and we do have needs, and we have the right to exist. And I want them to reach a place where they're comfortable coexisting with us without feeling like they need to change their values. I don't feel like anybody needs to change their values. I just feel like there needs to be an agreement to coexist.
Jay highlighted the importance of the LGBTQ community having access to the resource that they need. And what would a future mean to be able to also provide that?
And I also feel like within that environment of peace, LGBTQ people need to be able to access resources and access community. And maybe for our community, I think in the future we should have a lime. We should have like a chill spot, you know, like we should have a place where we can go to access community and meet other LGBTQ people and feel safe in that location. So that is also something that I envision for the future. And who knows, that might be next year. Like, every year I'm surprised that it's happening faster than the timeline that I envision. We talk about cracking the glass ceiling. I always feel like you have to chip it away, but you never expect for the ceiling to just fall apart by itself because of the work that you've already done. So I do see it having a bright future, and I think it's something that's gonna always be around. And, you know, I applaud our community and the leaders in the community for actually wanting to learn more about the LGBTQ population and educate themselves and actually having that empathy towards us. That's something that I didn't think I would see, and I'm seeing it a lot. I think we have a bright future.
Thank you to Jay, Jamal, and Bobby for being here and breaking barriers and doing so much work for One Love, but also in the Caribbean community. I appreciate you being here and sharing your vision and wisdom for making this world a better place. I am going to put the One Love Facebook page on under the description of this episode, so please feel free to check that out. We are going to meet back here again next Tuesday for another episode, so stay tuned for that. And I want to thank you for listening to us and for being with us today. I will see you later, and be in peace, folks, and have a great rest of your day.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.